Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Law. Oh, hey, Battleship's getting a little respect. I put it on the forums. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
I saw it at the DVD package at the convenience store today.
Because oh, okay.
That's how you know a movie's made it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, Battleship! And my first thought was, I wonder why people hated that movie so much.
Yeah. No, it was down on a list of the best movies you didn't see of this year.
Hmm. The best movies you didn't see. For a reason.
Nice. So, it said it was a lot of fun. It was a good summer fair.
Yeah. We've said before, I don't know why people dumped on that movie.
Yeah.
Including yourself.
Hey, I didn't dump on it. Yeah. What did they expect? It's called Battleship. About the game. There's aliens. What did you expect? Yeah. So we both finally watched the season finale of True Blood, and that's pretty good.
Yeah, it ended really well.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with the way that ended.
Pretty excited about season 6 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More werewolves. Hotter werewolves. Yeah. Or at least that's the way it's been sounding like it's been going recently.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think. I guess we can't really say anything about it other than we're really pleased. Yeah, we're really excited about season 6 because, yeah, we don't want to give anything away if someone hasn't seen it.
I'm sure people have seen it.
Yeah.
Yes, everyone's seen that.
Yeah. Everyone who wants to see it has seen it.
It's not for lack of desire, really.
We were talking about the amount of nudity that's in True Blood today. And we were just talking to somebody, and they said, I don't like any... I get distracted when a TV show has got nudity.
Well, it wasn't so much you get distracted. I think he was saying that sometimes it could be awkward or uncomfortable, yeah. Which I certainly agree with. Yeah, sometimes you're watching something, and you're like, you know, especially if you're watching with, like, your wife or girlfriend, you're kind of like, yeah, this is going on a little too long.
Yeah.
With the nudity and the sex scene, and just kind of fast forward, so...
That totally reminds me on a slightly different topic. I watched an episode of Game of Thrones the other day in Saudi. My wife was nearby. She watched it as well, and she asked, why do they talk so much during the sex scenes?
Or couldn't it be like, why do they have sex during the talking scenes?
Exactly.
Do you remember which episode it was, out of curiosity?
Which was it? It was one of the older ones that I'm still catching up.
Hmm.
Sorry, I don't remember which one, but...
Yeah. I mean, like we were saying, it's... I don't know, in... True Blood, it's kind of different. You know, like, there's not a lot of nudity, and as Lyle pointed out, it's not always sexual either.
Except I didn't point that out in the episode.
Sorry, sorry, going back to the prior conversation we had with this other person at work.
The one that you guys have never heard before.
Yeah, sorry, all right. You want to do that over?
That's all right, man. Keep rolling.
Just let it all fall out.
It's not gratuitous. Yeah. At least I don't find it gratuitous.
That also kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that was my big turn off to Game of Thrones. You're like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, you don't need it.
You don't need it. You're doing it because you think people aren't going to pay attention unless you put nudity on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It made me feel like you therefore think I'm a child. Like, I can't pay attention.
Yeah.
Or there's not important enough to pay attention to. Where, yeah, in True Blood, it makes sense for the story. It's not just, hey, pay attention, you know, because there's boobs on the screen. So.
Yep.
Right on.
Right on.
You mean cool.
Radical.
I was talking to somebody about True Blood, and then they mentioned that they were watching Glee.
Because those are two totally identical things.
I think the common thread was their TV shows. And we were happened to be watching them. But you know, you know there's that, like, that certain point in a friendship where you actually start to become really honest with somebody. Yeah, we weren't there yet. So they're like, okay.
So therefore you held back your comment?
Yeah, I was like, oh, Glee, wait, you know, what season? Season 2? And I'm like, oh, that's terrible. But I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of funny. I like Kurt and his dad. So, you know, focus on the positives. Yeah. Because you're establishing a friendship.
Whereas if I had said, yeah, I was watching Glee, you're like, why are you watching that piece of crap?
Yeah. But in the
friendships are based on like a feeling of mutual respect, which it doesn't sound like there is.
Well, it is. You respect the fact that I hate Glee, and I respect the fact that you watch crap. How's that?
There you go.
I think friendships start on that mutual respect.
And it just slowly goes downhill.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking of, like, marriage advice I would give to somebody, and they're getting married, and I was like, you know when you say you want to find that person you can be yourself with? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, no, don't be yourself. Because if you're a boring person, no one's going to want to live with a boring person. It doesn't matter that you're married now. If you're a miserable person, who's going to want to live with a miserable person? Be the best self that you can be. I don't know.
Like the U.S. Army. Be the best self you can be.
Yeah. Don't be your real self.
Lie to your future spouse all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when you're dating, you're like putting on your best face and it's like you got a marriage certificate. What? They can't get divorced now or whatever. Like times have changed, you know?
Time to take the game face off.
And take the game books out. This is what you married.
For more relationship advice, please see our forums on the Lila channel.
So, all right, now we're going to change pace, and we're going to get on to our topic, which is going to be about pacing.
Hey!
Oh, hey-o.
Are we at the point in our friendship where I can comment on that?
No.
No?
Okay. So by pacing, you know, we mean not only how you pace a particular session, but also how you pace a campaign. I mean, we see lots of examples in TV, movies, in a book, you know, when to speed it up, when to slow it down so that you're definitely getting the most out of the emotion in whatever game. Yeah. So I guess the two main speeds are fast or slow, because nobody knows medium. Because that would be normal. Yeah. So,
well, I guess you medium could, or normal could be, like, if people are saying, you know, it's kind of one of those things, like, how do you measure it? If someone says it's going too fast, well, obviously you have a problem. If it's saying going too slow, obviously you have a problem too. If no one says anything, well, then it's kind of normal.
Are you trying to define medium, really?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Really just slowed the pace of this episode.
All right. And see, there's the complaint.
Yeah.
Speed it up.
And at this point, we wanted a fast pace to get into the actual meat. So we're going to talk about when a slow pace is appropriate, when a fast pace is appropriate, and also when it would be different for both in a session and in a campaign. And, of course, we'll also be talking about some ideas that we've tried successfully and unsuccessfully in order to incorporate, like, pacing and timing into the games. So when would you incorporate a fast pace? And, of course, the follow-up then is going to be, how would you incorporate a fast pace in either a story, in either a session or a campaign?
Well, I think the obvious answer for that is, like, a very action-packed story, such as we talked about in that Thrillers episode. You know, you definitely want a fast pace. It sounds like a cop-out, but any kind of, I guess, story where you want a lot of tension or action. Like, I don't know, I watched the Indiana Jones movies again.
All four?
Sorry, no, only the first two.
Okay.
So, Razor Lost Ark and Temple of Doom. And I think Temple of Doom especially was a pretty fast-paced movie for the most part. Right? You just kind of go from action scene to action scene to action scene. And there's not a lot of downtime.
Really?
I would say, for the most part, there's not a lot of downtime. You know, they kind of do the, when they're like, you know, no spoilers here. You start in Shanghai. And then, yeah, okay, the part in India is a little bit slow, but a lot of the travel is compressed, where they just draw, like, you know, the red line across the map, and now you're in the next scene, and something happens.
I would have defined Temple of Doom as the slowest of the series, but...
Okay, but...
Well, regardless, anyway. But you're right, to the series as a whole, like, especially about, like, the travel compression of time. And it suits the pulp genre very well to have that kind of really breakneck speed as you're going, just action scene, after set piece, after combat, after whatnot. So, yeah, definitely that suits it. As well, you mentioned, like we said in the Thriller episodes, if you're doing a Thriller or a horror styled game, then you want to keep the tension ratcheted up as much as possible. So a pace that the players have difficulty keeping up with is definitely suitable for that.
So yeah, especially like you said about pulp, Chris, because I'll be running like a pulp game soon. And so I've been reading a lot of these adventure modules from AAA games, and there's a lot of good ideas in there, but they're written in a way where they constantly say, you know, don't give the players time to breathe, or don't worry about the travel arrangements to get from point A to point B, or, you know, a lot of the research that they have to do is just kind of compressed into a single role, and the mentality is just kind of, you know, push them on to the next action scene so that it'll be exciting. And I certainly agree with that, but on the other hand, sometimes it's nice to have, you know, I guess kind of slower sessions, but can you get too action-packed, you know, where if every scene is just kind of, and the next one is action, action, action?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you can, if you're just doing one action scene after another, especially if it's in a game system that has a lot of rules mechanically based, because, you know, you can get tired of rolling dice. You might want to get in and just do more of the role play. And also, as we mentioned in the Thrillers episode way back when, people who make a suspense movie, when you make a suspense movie, you don't want to keep the suspense at a high level the entire movie. You want to have periods where the audience has a chance to calm down, catch their breath, because it allows you to ratchet up the suspense again and have it be a greater effect. So, yeah, I don't think that fast pace can work for an entire campaign length if it's a long one, but it can be set as kind of the pace for the campaign, but don't make it every single session like that.
Hmm. Well, that was even in, like, because the modules I was reading were meant to be kind of, they could be expanded to multiple sessions, but they're pretty much designed to be one play session of about, like, you know, 4 to 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like overall they were pretty breakneck, you know?
Hmm. Well, that's actually something that I want to say. For a fast paced, a module or like a con game, those are the kinds that a fast paced really suits itself to, because A, you're usually under a real world time limit. And B, you want to keep it exciting for the whole duration of the game. You don't really need the downtime because there's only the one session.
Yeah, the fast pace, like, especially in like a con game, then you don't have to worry about people feeling awkward role playing in front of people they don't know. They get excited and you can kind of, you know, force the decisions. You know, people get, you know, I mean, that's where a lot of the humor comes, is people making stupid choices because of time constraints.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. But then who wants to wait for somebody they barely know? They sit back and you're like, oh, just hurry up and do something.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think a fast pace is really difficult to enforce in a role-playing game just because of the number of rules that there generally are. Even in a game that they say is like has barely any rules, there's still enough rules that people stop and think, or they're trying to consider their options, have to look stuff up. I mean, that's the death of the fast pace as soon as somebody reaches for the rule book. And I think those are considerations that somebody has to make, or the game master has to take into consideration and to prepare for that.
That was one point that I thought about before as well, because I think that you really need to build in consequences and actually like a serious set of rules in order to keep the fast pace, because if you let it slip, you let people think or gab or whatnot, then you can lose control of it and the pace will slow down. It's actually something that I'm not very good at myself. I'm way too forgiving if people, you know, oh wait, one more kind of thing.
Yeah, certain easy ones are like the no take back rule. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where somebody can't say, oh, wait, no, I don't do that. Another fun one is they have to time out if they actually want to say stuff out of character. Mm-hmm. So everything they say is said in character.
Right.
And that forces them to really, it can really compress the conversation at the table.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can still have a lot of fun totally playing in character. But as soon as you have a slower pace, or the medium pace, as Wayne will probably define later in the episode, then, you know, people can go jump in and out of character, you know, because there's no pressure to not be in character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the using the no takebacks, or whatever you say at the table is said in character, unless you do a timeout or some kind of like hand gesture on your forehead that indicates this is out of character. Because not only does it help enforce that sort of fast pace and the idea that there are consequences to your actions that, you know, in real life, you wouldn't be able to take back, and this game is kind of trying to be somewhat a little bit like real life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it also gets people a little bit more comfortable role-playing, because they won't have to put on a funny voice if they're not comfortable doing it, or they won't have to, you know, it's preferable if they put on the mannerisms of their character when they're speaking in their character's voice.
You know, role-play.
Exactly. But if there's some kind of symbol that means this is out of character, well, then everything you say when not using that symbol is in character, and it takes the pressure of having the roleplay off a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's you actually just reverse it, because there seems to be like a default, even though you play a role-playing game, that everything the person says is out of character until they make that conscious, you know, put that slight accent on their voice or whatever, and then they say something in character. You reverse it. It's like everything you say is in character, unless you consciously make it clear that it's out of character.
Right.
And that, yeah, so even though, I mean, these rules are done to have a fast pace, it can also just be a generally good rule to have at your table if the players are going out of character far too much and they're not immersing themselves in the story.
Yeah.
Another thing is, what do you do with the 300-400 page rule book? And I think one of the things is when you've established that there are certain moments in your session that this is fast paced time, is that if somebody can't think of the rules, just roll the die, you know, and it's some sort of, you will make a quick decision as the game master. And people just have to accept that is like, you know, if you're playing White Wolf, okay, roll it, use these. Like this is your dice pool. This is your dice pool. And people accept that, you know, and they either succeed or fail depending on the die roll. In D&D, I guess it could be just roll the d20, difficulty this.
Yeah, actually, sorry to admit that it never actually occurred to me that as the DM, you know, you can just say that, don't bother looking up the rules now. We'll just do this and we'll worry about it later. Yeah, it never occurred to me until somebody else mentioned it.
Really?
But it works.
Well, no, I mean, if they know the rules and they can recall it instantly, that's great. But I you know, just from experience, it's like, you know, sometimes somebody forgets the rule and then it's like I said, the death of the fast pace is when they open up the rule book and start looking for something because then it kills it for everybody.
Yeah.
Now you could just say, damn, you're out.
Yeah.
Everybody continue, but.
Yeah, I hope this doesn't come off as sounding whiny about 4E, but I found that was one of the weaknesses that I didn't like about 4E was that because the combat was so mechanical, if you needed a rule, you actually needed to look up the rule for it, and people really wanted to. And that definitely took a lot out of the speed.
Yeah, but what I think, like we said on a previous episode, like most game systems have what we'll call like a core mechanic, you know? Like in D20, it's, you know, you roll a 20, add a modifier, you want to roll high. In Savage Worlds, it's you roll your skill and you want to get above a 4, you know? I think GURPS is like, what, 3d6? And you're trying to beat a target number. Ubiquity is just, you know, roll dice and more success is the better. Same with White Wolf. So, so long as the game master and the players know and really internalize that rule, then you can just kind of ad-lib and keep things pretty fast-paced. Like, I know when I run Ubiquity in the Hollow Earth Expedition and players do things that I wasn't expecting, I just say, okay, great. You know, roll your dice pool, and I look at their successes, and if it looks like enough successes to me, I just say, yes. You know, you do it, and here's what happens, rather than trying to worry about how many exact successes they got or if they beat, like, a target number.
What are the grappling rules? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, inside my head, it's like, yeah, it looks like you did well enough there, so just move the story along. Mm-hmm. You know?
Certain like systems like World of Darkness and Ubiquity are really good in that. In World of Darkness, it's a pretty standard difficulty number. Like, nobody has to ask, well, what's the difficulty number? It's all about the size of the dice pool. Mm-hmm. And the same with Ubiquity. It's all, like, X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
So you just grab it and whatever your dice pool is. And something that was where it's that quick, and you can even establish every player has got their own, this is your default dice pool. If you can't think of something, this is what you'll roll. And perhaps there's even like a little penalty so that the person's not purposely forgetting the rules so they can get this extra bonus. So maybe it's slightly worse than probably if they customized. Those unfamiliar with World of Darkness, you're basically combining things like skills with your attributes to make, and you put them into different combinations to form dice pools. So if you have something that's a bit worse than your kind of average dice pool, and that's your default dice pool, then it's like, I'll just roll the die pool, throw that. I think you have to have something similar for a game like, Dungeons and Dragons, which does rely on different difficulty numbers, where it's, you've got maybe three of them, and you just go easy, hard, or easy, medium, hard. And you just call out one, and then they roll their die. And they've got a standard, like, thing that they tack on to it. They roll a d20, and you've got a standard plus whatever on that.
That appears to be one of the ways that D&D Next might possibly work. Where they have kind of like a set difficulty number of, you know, a range of easy to difficult, with static numbers. And so it looks like the game master would just be able to say, great, that looks like it'd be difficult, which means it's 25. So roll and add your dex modifier. Did you beat it? Yeah, okay. So.
Well, I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, D&D is always, that's part of the DM's job is to assign difficulty numbers to all of the tasks going on. That's something that they should be able to do at a most basic level. But I think D&D hasn't been as strong as that in previous editions because it requires three things. The dice roll, your ability modifier, and then some other bonus, be it an attack modifier or a skill bonus or something like that. And if you're just kind of freewheeling it, if there isn't a skill that matches what you're trying to do, then you're only left with whatever ability modifier goes, and that can leave you slightly disadvantaged. But it sounds like with D&D Next, they're only going with the ability modifier, so that will be fixed.
Hmm.
But I do appreciate the way that White Wolf works, the kind of that ad lib of mixing your different attributes together. It's so smooth. It's really good for a freewheeling open system.
Yeah, and I definitely think it helps keep things fast pace.
Yep. I also have to give people a time limit in order to make their decisions. I think we've tried the hourglass.
Yeah, egg timer, like 2-minute thing.
Yeah, an egg timer would actually be better because the hourglass just doesn't work because then you've got to like turn it back over.
Right.
Yep.
That's the thing about Space Hulk is Space Hulk uses an hourglass and when you are struggling to make decisions as the Space Marines, yeah, that can seem pretty exciting, but the problem is if you already know what your plan is and you do it and you've got like half the hourglass left, then you just gotta wait, kind of like trying to get that sand down, so then it actually slows down the game.
The true secret is 2 hourglasses.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Not playing Space Hulk with you again.
Well, the game only provides one. I mean, who has hourglasses in the house these days?
We've got 2 copies.
Oh, okay.
You show up to my place, play Space Hulk, and I'm like, hey, what's that extra hourglass in your pocket?
I've got 2 hourglasses because I game with Yujiro.
Yeah.
Because he needs the 2 hourglasses.
And they'd literally be hourglasses. You know?
But yeah, the first hourglass is done, Yujiro. You get half.
Yeah, right.
Got another 30 minutes.
So here's a question for you guys. Would you show the timer or not? Like, if you say, okay, you've got the set time to do your action or to say what you've got to say, do you just let them go and then say stop when the time's run out, or do you hold it in front of them?
I would show it. I think it adds to the excitement.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a case for either, you know? Like, yeah, definitely showing the timer and how much time you have left will put pressure on the player because they know they only have a certain amount of time left and they have to do all the things, you know, that they want to do with that time limit. But... Okay. It could also be, you wouldn't be able to do it that often, but it could also just kind of be, not a surprise, because I think it would be cheating the players if you just busted a time limit out on them without warning them first.
Mm-hmm.
But it could just be, you know, in certain situations, no, you don't know how much time you have to get this thing done, you know, just whether you're disarming a trap or whether, you know, guards are going to show up or whether there's going to be some consequence.
Yeah.
You know, the character might not realistically know how much time they have to do this thing. And then I think a hidden timer could add just as much tension in a different way.
I guess so, except when the person runs out of time, they didn't know. And then you do that once and they're like, oh, you'd have no action. And then there's then the game stops. Well, you know, I get an action.
Which is why I wouldn't spring it on them.
No, but even if you do and then like they can't keep track of time or something. But
well, granted, you would have to do it, you know. The GM.
No, I got that. I didn't think it was hidden from everybody.
Even I don't know the time.
Schrodinger's egg timer. Well, it could have run down, or it might not have.
It's just wait. Yeah.
Cool.
One thing that we tried, and it was our homage to the 24 TV series, which I think is great. A great example of how to do pacing, either in a session or for a campaign. More on that later, but we tried to do the real time, and we did it where we displayed the timer. It was in the middle of the table, and everything was like set. As in, okay, there's in the story even that was incorporated. It's like they made a plan. It was like, give me 5 minutes, and we'll go do this.
Five.
Yeah. And they came 3 minutes later. Certain things that we did learn from that. One of them was about the rules, when people forgot, and we didn't have that backup in place. and it really hurt it because then we were stopping the timer. And the other one was...
Elevators don't take a minute to get up to the third floor.
The other one was the elevators. And okay, you're in an elevator now. which is something... when you do real time, it makes it very difficult to compress time then. So as far as the pulp thing, so there was that real trade-off that we didn't anticipate, actually.
Like, we've talked about that before, and only now have I kind of realized that from the other perspective, right? Because I was the player who, I didn't feel gypped, but I feel like I didn't get that full 5 minutes. But then, yeah, looking at it from, I guess, Chris's perspective, where how long was he expected to stay in that elevator? And yeah, then, Chris just sit there for a minute, not really doing anything because, you know, that's how long it would take to get up there. And hearing that now, yeah, you obviously can't compress time if you're going to do that real-time experiment. And it kind of means you can't really split the party when you do that.
It definitely makes it hard to, yeah. I think, in hindsight, a better way to have handled it would have been to, say, declare your actions in addition to your real-time thing. So have a conversation, maybe it only lasts a minute, and then I get into the elevator and I go upstairs. I mean, that's a declaration, but of course that's going to waste the rest of the time. So you can say, okay, you haven't used the whole 5 minutes, but we're going to cut you here. Go to Wayne, you have your 5 minutes.
Yep. Yeah, you could do it that way. I mean, one thing, again, that we hadn't considered with using 24 is that, yeah, they do the cutaways, and that character that they're cutting away from, their story continues. Mm-hmm. And the writers know what it is, and they know where it's going to pick up from later. But when you got players, it's like, okay, we're going to cut away from you for 5 minutes. And I mean, you can do it in some circumstances. This touches into what we talked about in prisons, is that in a story, things can end at great times. So it's like, we're going to cut away from you. We're going to come back to you when you're at the library or wherever you're going. But that's much more difficult to do in a role-playing game.
Yeah. Yeah, to do that successfully or to do that without having to have players sit out for long periods of time, they would almost need to have, like, multiple characters at different places. You know, okay, now, first, you're playing character A, you know, over here, doing this thing, and we hit, like, a cliffhanger or some interesting point, or there's going to be some downtime in this storyline, so now we're going to jump over here to characters B and run them through, and, you know, characters A are assumed to kind of continue along with their story until they intersect again, but... could be an interesting experiment, but it could also get very messy.
I think you could do the real time for scenes as opposed to what was planned to be a session of real time. And you could do scenes, and it's like, I suppose you would have to set it up, or you can establish certain types of scenes are real time. For example, I suppose action, but I also think conversations would actually probably be better or easier to do. So
I think I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there, Lyle, in that I don't think real time works well for an action scene. Because
I just said conversations, it works better.
Oh, okay. But you also said it works for an action scene.
I said, for example, an action scene.
Yeah, and I disagree with that.
Are you going to say conversations would be better?
Well, no, I don't think that it works well for an action scene.
Okay, are you saying it's going to work better for a conversation scene?
No.
So you're going to say it works equally poorly for both?
Okay, yes. I suppose if it doesn't work that well for an action scene, then yes, it would work better for a conversation scene. Wait, let me say this. I don't think it would work at all for an action scene. So there. Take that.
All right. And why don't you think it would work at all for an action scene?
Just because role-playing games rely so much on mechanics that if you use real time, you have to pause it to roll the dice and get the effects of the dice, or don't pause it, but then you're using the real time for out of character or out of game action.
But so couldn't the dice rolling simulate the actual swinging of the sword, the shooting of the gun?
It could simulate it, but does a gunshot really take the time that it takes to roll to hit and roll for damage and describe what the effect is?
I'll say this. I think certain systems, it's easier to do it, you know, because in like White Wolf and Ubiquity, it's just one roll for practically everything, where other games, you have to roll for hit, damage, location, and there's other things you have to do. And also certain games say, you know, one combat round is 6 seconds. Other games say it's 1 second. Other ones just kind of give you this nebulous amount of time. So, I don't know. I think it can be more exciting to take smaller chunks of time in a combat scene, but...
Imagine the scene in Fellowship of the Ring, where they're in the Mines of Moria. And they're mm-hmm. going across that bridge. Mm-hmm. And you make that real time. The bridge is going to collapse in a minute. Not like the bridge is going to collapse some indefinite time in the future.
Sooner rather than later.
Or, and they got to fight the way. Imagine like you put that one orc standing there and you're like, damn. You know, now we don't have any time.
Yeah.
We've got to kill this guy, you know? And certainly like certain systems lend themselves better than others to real time in like the damage capacity. So if you have a, let's wear him down until he's down to zero hit points, then that is a bit unrealistic. But if you have a system where it's more of a, if you hit well enough, it's a knockout blow.
Mm-hmm.
Then definitely I think that kind of simulates or can work in conjunction with real time.
That said, though, the attrition style game that can work well with real time in that it's much more tension because you know there is not going to be a one blow to take this guy down.
Yeah, but if we're talking about real time, wouldn't you want a more realistic system?
Yeah, you're right on that.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for the ha.
I was expecting it too.
No, I just have this image in my head now of people playing like D&D 4th edition, and the DM puts like one orc on the battle mat, and they're like, pfft. All right.
Yeah, what's it?
This combat's going to suck. And he's like, and, yeah, everything, everything behind you is collapsing. Go. Like, oh no!
Yeah. I don't know. I have a suggestion for this. I don't know if you guys are going to agree with it though, but I was going to recommend actually doing all of the mechanics stuff outside of the time limit. You know, maybe you have a certain set amount of seconds or whatever to declare your action or say your bit, but then do the dice rolling afterwards.
Could you elaborate? Like, how would that, if you give us an example?
I think he means like, almost like a, not a chess clock exactly, but he's like, okay, here's my action.
You ever played the old Space Hulk PlayStation game?
No, actually.
I played one for the PC, but I think it was the same one.
Yeah.
That, it was like first person, yeah?
First person. It's actually really good. I really enjoyed the game. But yeah, you had a certain amount of time on the mission, mm-hmm. and you click the button, and that was, I think, when you clicked and gave commands, that ran the time. Is that correct, Chris?
Yes, yes.
And then you click back, and it kind of just shows you what happens, mm-hmm. how it unfolds. So you have like a time limit to make all your decisions, and then you click back to it unfolding and stuff like that. It takes a little bit of getting used to, mm-hmm. but then once you do, it's a lot of fun, and certainly the challenge. The difficulty level really keeps up. You know, it doesn't feel like it's too much, but it feels... That was one of the more exciting games that I played.
Yeah. I remember I recommended it a few episodes back. We were talking about ships. It was called the Full Throttle or Full Thrust, depending on which version of it, but it's a miniatures vehicular combat game.
Yeah.
But the way the rules work is that you and your opponents write down your tactics, what you're going to do this turn at the same time, and then compare the effects later on. I could see that working really well in a D&D game. You know, the party goes away from the DM to discuss what their actions are going to be, write it down, or if you trust each other enough, you know, just declare it. And the DM also declares what his players are going to do and throw it all on the table, see what happens. You only have a minute to decide for each side.
Kind of sounds like Space Alert,
board
game.
Yeah.
Which was really tense.
Yeah, that was a really intense game.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'd love to try that. It could be a lot of fun.
Didn't you try that?
I think he meant the D&D thing you just suggested.
A version of it in a role-playing game.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So I think what Chris is suggesting is almost like the opposite of the Space Hulk, where, you know, the dice rolling happens off the clock.
Yes.
That could work.
Yeah.
Can you have a fast-paced campaign? Now, you've already, like, mentioned earlier, I think it was you, Chris, or maybe it was you, Wayne. You guys sound the same to me. I don't know.
I care not enough to differentiate you two.
Is that even paying attention?
Yeah, Wayne, Chris, whatever.
Where, like, you know, when you have a horror game, you kind of can't have it, like, all at one intensity or just people get tired. But can you have a fast-paced campaign, and how would you do that, if you could?
Well, I think, like, an example of what you can do is, like, what Chris did in his 4E game, where the characters and the players both know something bad is going to happen. And they have to stop it. Or like a season of 24, you know? You have a goal, and that goal is a time. The time's not going to move. You're not going to get an extension on this, right? And I don't know. I think that keeps both the players and characters motivated to do things. And then the GM just kind of, not throws up roadblocks, but, you know, can just put things in their path that they have to deal with. And of course, they have to deal with them pretty quickly because they have to get to that end goal essentially before time runs out. And I think that's how you could sort of do a fast-paced campaign, you know. Certain set individual sessions would be more or less fast-paced, you know, they, maybe they're just recovering from getting over one roadblock and, you know, they get a little bit of downtime, but not a lot, because always in the back of their mind is, okay, we can't rest or we can't wait for too long because we have to accomplish that goal and the clock is always essentially running.
I agree completely because I used it in my game.
Yeah, yeah.
That's actually the way that I set up all my campaigns is, I learned it from, my old DM back in the States, Devin, who's a great game master. And, it was make a calendar for your game. You know, on this day, this is what's going to happen. We discussed it when we were talking about villains before that I make the plan for the villain. What's he going to do and what would happen if there were no players there or characters there to intervene in his nefarious plot? So, yeah, exactly. That puts a fire under characters. If they don't do something, then whatever bad plans you have are going to occur.
I think another thing you should do or could do is to incorporate cliffhangers and try to, if not every session, most sessions end them on a cliffhanger. If you want to see a TV series that does a good job of ending just about every episode on a cliffhanger, look at 24, which can be quite addictive in any. In Japan, it first came out on DVD, I believe, before it hit TV. So you could just rent, like 6 discs in a row and just watch. And you would watch them, like, 6 in a row. Hmm. But if you want to see, I think True Blood is a good example of where they don't always use a cliffhanger, but it's certainly, when they do, because it's a cliffhanger, you can't wait for the next episode.
Right.
So when they do drop them in, it almost has even more of an impact. Because you're like, now what?
Yeah, yeah. Like when I ran the pulp game at 3 separate conventions, there were like a year between, you know, each session essentially. But I made sure to end each one on like a cliffhanger. And I found that was also a good way to start the session because the previous one had ended on a cliffhanger. I could just sort of quickly set up, and here's what happened. And here's the predicament that the party is in right now, because that's where the cliffhanger left off.
Yeah.
And even though there were different players playing in like those 3 games, it gave everybody a real sense of purpose and something to do right away that, you know, that kind of momentum carried the rest of the story forward and the rest of the session forward.
Yeah, it started off with a fast pace and went that way the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree that it's a great thing to do, but I've always had a lot of difficulty with that. Like actually getting the sessions to end on a cliffhanger. I worry about that it might feel contrived. You know, if there's not a natural cliffhanger coming, that if I just kind of throw one in, it wouldn't feel natural, but I don't know. But it is a great idea.
Yeah. But, I mean, it can be done, you know. I mean, I think the danger is if you plan the cliffhanger to come at certain story points, I think you should plan the cliffhanger to come about this story point, because then it might come right before or right after.
Yeah.
Or shortly before, shortly after, and it's just whenever the evening ends, so to speak.
Yeah.
And yeah, plan it like if you want a certain person to turn up, don't write it in, they will turn up at this house.
Mm-hmm.
But they will turn up wherever the players are going to happen to be that evening.
Right.
A letter is going to arrive or email will arrive, I guess, whatever genre you're playing in, and somehow it's going to get to them. Of course, if they're in a dungeon, it's like, you know, Dalaran.
Oh, what is this email? Yeah. Hey, I got 3 bars down here in this dungeon. Awesome.
Right, the fighter's iPhone goes off.
Yeah. No, I think when I first started DMing, I kind of worried about things making sense.
I was going to do a manor mode joke, but.
Oh, all right.
Too late now.
Come did. But
didn't you put that on?
No, I was.
Does the English phone have manor mode?
I believe it's called silent.
Yeah, they don't call it manor mode.
Oh, it's called silent mode.
Yeah, silent mode.
Maybe vibrate.
Vibrate. Yeah.
Sorry, we're just trying to get some Japanese
mana
quota in our episode.
Mana modo.
Yeah. But no, like first, I kind of worried about things making sense, you know, and oh, you know, well, why would that email show up now, or why would that person be there, you know? Oh, like would they realistically be there, or would this event realistically happen at that time? And now I'm kind of the opinion where, you know what, it doesn't matter if it would realistically happen, because you know what, it makes for an interesting story. You know, and you read a novel and you watch a TV show or you watch a movie and, you know, events happen and you're like, well, sometimes you say that couldn't realistically happen, but other times you're like, no, that I can accept that, because without it, the story would be boring, and that makes the story much more interesting to watch. And
absolutely.
I would even say, like, if you hit a point in your session where it makes sense for that cliffhanger to happen, I would just say, let the cliffhanger happen and then end the session, even if you have a little bit of time left over. You know, like, don't end the session after, like, an hour when everyone, you know, cleared their day to play, but essentially leave on a high note, you know? I think it's much better to just end on that kind of exciting cliffhanger and have everybody, you know, sort of chomping at the bit for the next session, rather than just kind of keep going and have the session kind of peter out, you know?
Yeah, agreed completely.
And now we're going to take things a little slow and move on to slow pace.
This is what, the Barry White section of the episode? Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
So when would you use a slow pace?
When you hate your players.
I think when you're trying to, like, squeeze out a lot of emotion and really have that emotional payoff in a verbal interaction, let's say, or kind of, I guess an example would probably be better to use is, like, say, for example, in a seduction scene, if it happens too fast, then
it's like a high school seduction scene.
No. Yeah, so I was like,
best 3 minutes ever.
Those are good for you. So I hope it gets better.
I was going to say, I think, or even like when you said, if you're trying to go for like some kind of emotional payoff, and I thought the example you use in like the vampire game, when my character was actually unknowingly interacting with the killer and he didn't know, and you kind of like played out this scene, which was a little bit uncomfortable, actually, just because the two characters were kind of so awkward, and that would have lost something if it had gone by quickly. You know, you kind of wouldn't have gotten this slightly awkward uncomfortableness, you know, where I kind of didn't know how to react as my character, and I think that scene would have really lost something if it just happened in a couple seconds. So.
Yeah, I gotta agree entirely. Lyle, you are the master of slow pacing. I mean, some of the scenes in the vampire game were so tense because you just let them, you had the real time, rule in play. And if you couldn't think of something to do, but you're sitting there live and, you know, the vampire prince is just staring at you, waiting for you to respond. It's just, what do I do? So, yeah, you can really wreak out some emotions there.
And it also gives people a chance to kind of do their... I always think about Good Will Hunting. You know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, they write the script, but a lot of it was kind of like fantasy. They probably had experience in bars where they wanted to say those things. They walked out of the bar and they're, oh, I should have said that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll go, do you like apples? And of course he's going to say, yeah. So I'm going to say, how do you like them apples? You know, whatever. Or he's going to say something. I'm going to come back about this book. You know, he'll say this about that, but I'll come back on that, you know. But it gives people a chance to like really, you know, try to do a little bit of poetry and have those great one-liners, you know, the Glengarry Glen Ross moments, the, you know, where they say something that they feel proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They can be actors.
Exactly. And if someone has a social character and they're not that gifted conversationally in real life, then it gives them a chance to play up that aspect as well.
Although they probably shouldn't have picked the social character.
Yeah. True.
That's what I was thinking. No, I can do the guy like, hold on. Wait, and the DM's like, you know, the guy's left the bar. You're sitting by yourself. You know, you're talking to nobody now.
The bar's closed.
Yeah, exactly. You took too long.
Yeah.
So how do you establish a slow pace? I mean, it's easy enough to say, oh, just play it slow. But yeah, there's a slow pace that is achieving something, and there's a slow pace that's just boring.
Yeah.
It's like just a moment. Thumb. And again, it's the same thing. I mean, this is the standard rule. It doesn't even matter if it's pacing, but if you're reaching through a rule book and it's a slow pace because everybody's reading the rules, then there's a little failure there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you get it where everybody's like in a slow-paced game, they're still leaning forward at the table because everybody's in.
Well, the best way that I know of to get the players to slow down and to work on it is actually to just shut up as the DM. I mean, whenever I just let you guys go and we were playing the D&D game, for example, we didn't make any progress at ever. I think, what was it, 2 hours that you guys took planning to go into the entrance of a cave?
All right, I claim full responsibility on that one, yeah.
You're talking about, like, rappelling down from the top of the cave or, wait, doing a distraction on the side. But, you know, I mean, that's one of the things is that you guys, and I'm sure lots of players out there as well, you love making plans, you know, coming up with ideas and seeing what's going to happen. The planning phase of a mission can be a lot of fun. So just let the players go and do it. I mean, maybe keep an eye on the clock so that you can cut it off if it starts running a little bit long, but yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I recently watched one of the earlier James Bond movies, like From Russia with Love, and you might disagree, Chris, but I thought that was pretty slow-paced, especially the beginning of that. But looking at it, James Bond was always finding something out. You know, he was kind of always leaning forward. And I think that's what the game master has to do to make a slow pace interesting. You know, especially with an investigation game, the players always have to feel as if they got new information, right? Mm-hmm. Because, like, as soon as they kind of hit a brick wall, it's like, great, well, we just spent that kind of hour interacting with this NPC and all this, you know, great kind of one-liners and banter that we came up with, and the guy doesn't know anything.
It doesn't mean jack.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean anything. Where we've wasted our time, you know, mm-hmm. where I think, yeah, they have to feel as if they got something, even if it's something small. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you would have to articulate that to the players before you started the game, because I think, like, certain players and certain games, they would want, like, a big payoff. You know, we spent kind of an hour real time or 2 hours talking to the NPC. We expect the entire case of this mystery to be laid at our feet where we can solve mm-hmm. it now. You know, I could see that happening for certain groups, where other groups would be satisfied with, you know, you got this little clue, this, like, one piece of the jigsaw puzzle, and you still need, you know, like, 10 or 11 more to solve the mystery. So yeah. It might be something you have to state up front.
Very true, actually. I think even with both speeding up the pacing and slowing down the pacing, I think an important part of it is having consequence. If you're talking about fast pacing, make there be a consequence if they go over the time limit or what there be. But with slow pacing, when the players are taking their time to think about what they want to do or how they're going to do it, then make that consequential as well. Exactly what you said, Wayne. If they spend a long time planning something, then have it be a good payoff. You know, if they spend a long time coming with that perfect zinger to use in the bar, then have the guy give a big reaction to it or, like, really affect him.
This is going to sound
wishy-washy.
No, not wishy-washy, but just pretty basic. Oh, yeah, I'll do the disclaimer. Yeah, this is basic advice, but you know that most people don't do it, so give me a break. And that is the same as with the fast pacing, is when they're doing that elaborate plan, they do it in character. And again, you can do the same rules, is that your default is whatever you say is in character. And even in a slow pace, you can it's quite easy to backtrack, but you're backtracking in character. You know, and if you're saying stuff that's kind of bizarre because you're speaking out of character when you shouldn't be speaking in character, then you gotta explain that in character, why you said that. Cause that turns, you know, kind of a tactical planning session into something out of, you know, I'm not saying it's the greatest TV series in the world, but something out of Leverage, where they, you know, they'll sit there and, you know, part of the fun of watching that is them talking about what their plan's going to be.
Right.
Yeah, like the Dirty Dozen kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just drawing a blank. I'm remembering the scene, but is it from the Dirty Dozen? Where they have, like, that kind of song, that mnemonic.
Yeah, like they count down, one, we go to the gate.
Yes,
two.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Wow, what a great movie. Yeah.
Now that I remember what it is.
I got a movie right this time. Yes.
No, exactly. And you do that. And maybe even, like, you know, make that mnemonic, you know? Or probably a great example of a slow pace. It would be the anti-24. If 24 is the, a great example of a fast-paced series. Friday Night Lights is an example of a slow-paced series. And the way even a slow series will slow down even more, so you're getting even more emotion out of that scene, but it's all like, what are they saying? What are they talking? And then when and of course they have the chance, you know, it's like, clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose, you know, like stuff like that. All of that in character. Yeah, so I just said, role play in a role play game. Suck it.
Well, it kind of does have to be said, I think. Wow. So I guess here's a question. Like, if you're trying to do a sort of a slower paced game, and the players are trying to, like, rush ahead, right? Like, if you're doing, like, a mystery game, and they go off after they find, like, two clues, you know, and they sort of jump to a conclusion, do you think it's acceptable for you as a GM to, like, throw roadblocks in their way?
Yeah, like, a slow-paced campaign can be really, really tough. Because a slow-paced scene is really easy to confine and really drag that out. But, man, I don't know, a slow-paced campaign. Yeah, you could throw roadblocks, but I guess it would have to feel,
yeah,
like I don't want to say natural,
fiction,
but
contrived.
Don't want to use that word either. You know, just reaching for the thesaurus right now.
It's kind of like we always say, if you're going to do something in a game, do it for a reason. Make it meaningful.
Yeah.
And if you're just putting something in there to slow people down, that's not a good reason.
But couldn't that be meaningful? Couldn't it be, I'm thinking that I'm defaulting to Call of Cthulhu, right? Because I tend to think that is usually a pretty slow-paced game, you know, where the characters want to research everything and make sure that they have everything right and cover all their bases, because if they get it wrong, there's going to be disastrous consequences. And, you know, someone playing in the game and you run off after only finding one clue, well, the game's going to end, you know, because you don't fight Cthulhu, right? So I'm just wondering, for that case, I think it's fine for a GM to throw in roadblocks. What those would be, of course, it would depend on, you know, the fiction, and, like, even though you don't want to say natural or contrived, Lyle, I think it would have to seem as if the GM wasn't putting the roadblock there just to slow things down, even though that's what they're actually doing, because, yeah, then I could see the players getting frustrated, but...
Well, again, if the point of the roadblock shouldn't be to slow the game down, that's not really a important or a good thing to do. If the roadblock is there because the players are running off, jumping to a conclusion too quickly, and it's going to kill the game and fun for everybody, then by all means, then throw a roadblock to try and convince them that they need to do more research, or they need to take this a little more carefully. Or if it's the other way around, where the players are just being really meticulous and searching out every clue they possibly can, well, that's fine. I mean, if they're having fun doing that, then more power to them, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure, like, an investigation where you're finding different clues necessarily needs a fast or slow pace, really. Because it's uncovering clues. I guess what it would be is just layers and whatever. You've already planned that ahead of time. I think if you have I read this a long time ago, and I believe it was in Dragon magazine. And a guy was talking about when he was a kid, and he ran a game with his dad. And he had a great dad, you know, playing a game. I believe it was Top Secret. And he had this whole thing set up, and he had the schematics for the ship. And his dad kind of thought about it, and he's like, all right. And he came up with a plan where he completely bypassed everything and blew up the ship or whatever, which was what he was supposed to do. And he's like, wow, you know, that kind of sucked, because that ruined everything. And his dad was like trying to play along. He's like, well, this is what I would do in this situation. It's just, yeah, that's great. But that's a plan. That's like a little step. That's one layer of your onion that you should be peeling. And if you want to, I guess if you want to call it a slow pace, but if you want this mystery to slowly unfold, then it's almost like a video game where you get to the boss, then you get to the next level. It's like they can skip ahead to the end of that layer, but it's only when they get to that layer that they're able to move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess you do that with Call of Cthulhu is like, and again, please watch 24 because you get some good ideas. And this is really not a spoiler if you've never watched that before, but there's always a twist, and it always comes about. It's amazing how great this TV series is, because they seem to follow the same formula every season, but always a twist. It always comes about the same time in the season.
I could see the character standing around saying, well, it's about time for that twist, don't you think? Yeah, what is it this time? Oh my god, you know, you didn't get ready for it this time.
And that's the thing, is you know it's coming, but it's like, then it comes and you're like, all right, well done. But it's like, this is what I think the mystery is. And it's like, you solve that, whether you rushed to it or took it slowly, bam. That wasn't really the mystery. Or that was part of it or whatever. And I guess you kind of see that in Sherlock Holmes 1 and 2, even though I didn't particularly care for either one, is that, yeah, you got that main guy, but then they kind of set up about this other guy, Professor Moriarty, in case you didn't know about Sherlock Holmes. so that then it's like, well, but that's the bigger mystery, you know? It's like, oh, cool. Except it wasn't. But in theory, that's pretty awesome. Yeah. So I guess that's what I do instead of Roblox, is you would already have it in place, is that there's always like breakers that prevents you, like fail safes. And probably in Japan, probably could learn a little bit about that, the nuclear fail safes. You
know? Yeah. So let's see, the players were just the tsunami?
Yeah. Take that slow, dudes. Take that slow. You don't want to rush building this.
Yeah, right.
How about in like in a scene that you want to have that emotional weight? What if the players are just trying to kind of rush through it?
But then you failed, because I mean, and it's sad when you do that, because but it's just, this scene means something to me, and for whatever reason, I didn't convey that. It didn't come across. I mean, you didn't hook them, and it's you can't really, like, you throw out the line, you put on the bait, and you can't really do it again, you know. And you just move on, and then you hope that next scene that you set up, and it could be kind of doing this, achieving the same result, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're watching Friday Night Lights and the coach gives a speech, and it's like, you know, sometimes you're going to fail, and it's from that failure, you know, that famous speech from Friday Night Lights, and you didn't get to that speech. But that's really important, because you want to set up something later on in the story where they are going to fail, but then they're going to come back from that failure or whatever. But you want that speech to be in their mind. Then you move the speech to another scene, and hopefully you'll hook them, and you keep throwing it out there.
Exactly.
They keep walking out the door, and you're like, the door's locked.
Hey, roadblock.
I don't care.
Right. Coach done talking. Yeah, right. I go and open the door. It's locked.
You break your leg standing up.
The door starts giving a speech.
Yeah. But that is frustrating. Yeah, it really is frustrating, is because, you know, it's like, I know people give this advice, and I'm going to give the opposite advice, because we know this is what happens, is that you're a game master, or you're a storyteller, and you're trying to tell a story. You know all the advice is don't try to write the story ahead of time, but you're trying to tell this story.
And you already have written it ahead of time.
Yes, and you've done that. And people do that, and you're like, You want, there's things that you want to get out of this story. I mean, what are these? Like, game masters, these selfless people that spend like hours of their free time to like have people.
You're supposed to dance for the player's amusement.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll run another campaign for you guys to like crap all over again. Thanks. Yeah. Where I get nothing out of it. But yeah, you write in stuff in the story that you want to get. Yeah. That's your payoff.
And then you stand up and break your legs. Why? Because I wanted it to happen.
This is all I have. This is the only thing I wanted in this story. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm taking the liberty to write your lines too, guys. So, that was a little sidetrack there.
No, I think it's a good point.
Well, we'll end this on a cliffhanger.
Which is what?
Will
rant will Lyle go on next?
Yeah. Will we talk about medium pace next episode? Or will we just end it here? Well, that was our episode on pacing. It's something that certainly when I watch a lot of shows, you definitely pay attention to, and it only after the fact, because if it's paced well, you don't notice it at all. Right. But afterwards, you're like, yeah, I mean, that scene just went on forever, and I didn't notice it because that was so great.
Yeah.
Or you're like, whoa, that was amazing. Like, how much stuff happened in that episode? You know, that's just unbelievable.
Or you finish saying, wow, that was like 20 minutes too long. Didn't need all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website. You can listen to it through Stitcher, download it through iTunes, or drive through RPG. You can also post in the forums, follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, or just send us an email, because we always love hearing from all of you. Thanks, and see you next time.
Bye.
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 Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.